Well, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, something looms on the horizon.
Yeah.
Right?
Should I be nervous?
It's not a berg, iceberg.
Oh, okay, good. I have no idea what we're talking about today, ladies and gentlemen. So today's episode is a complete surprise to me. We are doing this on the fly, which is good because that means I'm not prepped as usual.
Well, let's get right into it then. So the whole idea was I wanted something that sort of bridged off of last week's episode about Bob Clearmountain. We did the Who is Bob Clearmountain? If you missed that one, you need to go back and listen to that. It sort of sets this up because we were talking about how as the 70s and 80s progressed, how music got more and more studio heavy and you started to see specific guys that became experts at mixing and even the mastering thing, which we haven't covered a whole lot of. But I thought, well, let's, at one point I mentioned to you that 1992, Bob Clearmountain's recording of Robbie Robertson's Storyville was the first time he was nominated for a Grammy. And I thought, come on now.
Hard to believe.
Right, hard to believe. So I decided to think about, well, what were the nominations for Grammys throughout this period that we are calling our heyday? And that is the list that we're going to look at today and see who the nominees were, see who the winners were.
Do I have to have this all committed to memory?
No, I am going to present this list. So I looked far enough to just find this list. I haven't looked at it either. So I haven't prepped at all. I have no notes. You have no notes. This is more our observations and our thoughts on what we're going to talk about here, what we're going to see. So I don't know how far back you want to go. I know that our show kind of covers mid-70s to mid-80s, loosely.
Yep.
Do you want to go back at all into the start in the 70s and just quick hit some of the early 70s stuff?
Explain the ground rules to me. What happens?
So here, what we're going to talk about is we're looking at the category. I don't even know if this was a category that was announced on TV. This may be in one of those awards that happens prior to Best Engineered Album. So this is an award for the technical staff. I think it primarily goes to the chief engineer, whoever that would have been on the album. We'll look at and we'll see who those names are. I don't even know. But this is purely a sound quality award.
Okay.
So 1970, the winner was Abbey Road. Okay. Jeff Emmerich. Let's see. 71, Bridge Over Troubled Water. We'll spend more time as we get into our heyday.
Mm-hmm.
72, the theme from Shaft. So the soundtrack from Shaft, Isaac Hayes.
Who worked on that?
Henry Bush, Ron Capone, Dave Purple. I mean, nobody that I know. Ooh, Neil Diamond's Moods in 1973. Wow.
These are all the Grammy Award winners.
So, for example, 1973 there, Neil Diamond Moods wins. Others that were up against it, the other nominees were Baby, I'ma Want You by Bread.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Fragile. Honky Tonk Chateau, Elton John. And Son of Schmielsen, Harry Nilsson.
It's going to be interesting to see as we go through this list here where we hear the turn.
Yeah.
Like where it becomes Asia and things like that, right? Because this is all.
Yeah, I would say it definitely those nominees are not there yet.
Yeah.
For sure. If you want to call it proto for those that like the term, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's see what 1974. The winner was Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions.
Hmm.
And it beat out Dark Side of the Moon.
Wow.
Yeah. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Elton John. A Long Train Running, Doobie Brothers. So that's specifically for that song. So maybe you could nominate a song or an album. That's interesting. No Secrets, Carly Simon, which had Bill Schnee on it, who we have interviewed.
Yeah.
Go back and listen to those interviews.
Yes. Master at the Board or Chairman at the Board.
Yes. Yeah. I would say we haven't made the turn yet.
No, doesn't sound like it.
Okay, 1975. The winner definitely didn't make the turn. Band on the Run, another Jeff Emmerich thing, but Paul McCartney and Wings. I'm not sure that I would call that a sonic masterpiece.
I specifically don't like Wings because of the way it sounds.
It's a little all over the place, yeah.
It sounds like super lo-fi to me. Like they weren't even trying. I know. And then they get a Grammy.
In some cases, yes.
Shows you what I know.
Crime of the Century, Supertramp was a nominee. Gino Vannelli's Powerful People. I'm not sure it was a great sounding record yet either. Southern Comfort by the Crusaders. So, Yeah, definitely not in that Fidelity area yet, are we?
Are we now getting into 76, though?
We are.
Let's see if this is the year.
Okay.
This is the year that Yacht Rock officially begins, more or less.
Okay, so the winner, I do not know this album whatsoever, Janis Ian, Between the Lines.
Do not know
it. Any familiarity? Mm-mm. All right, let's see. Who did it, or what did it beat out? Another Vanelli album was nominated, Storm at Sunup.
Yachty.
10cc, the original soundtrack, as they call that, their first album, I guess, right? I Got the Music in Me, Thelma Houston, another Bill Schnee thing. Ooh. Self-titled Ambrosia.
Ooh.
Beat out. Hmm. So 1976, which one is that? That's the Alan Parsons one. So that's the one with, nice, very nice, right?
Let me confirm. You said there was 75.
That's 76, so the album may have come out
in 75.
The Grammy year like goes from October to October, so it's not a calendar year thing.
Gotcha. Yep, so Ambrosia was 1975. It is the one with, it's called Progressive Rock is the genre, and it is the one on which Alan Parsons was the mixdown engineer.
Yeah.
And the producer for their second album.
Okay. 77, then. We have the winner... was Breezin, George Benson. I didn't realize that Al Schmidt was the engineer on that.
Wow, so nor did I.
The award. So, again, I don't know if I would call that a pristine record yet. That beat out Dreamweaver, Gary Wright.
Which I was also not pristine.
Harry James, the King James version. Whoa. Next Ambrosia record, Somewhere I've Never Traveled. So another Alan Parsons.
Yep.
And Alan Parsons Project, his first one with that. Ensemble, Tales of Mystery and Imagination, which was his musical take on the Edgar Allan Poe series.
I'm listening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's, real quick, so you said Breezin was the winner that year?
Yeah.
We're talking about pristine. To me, it's like the hallmark of pristinity, is that a word? is how the snare sounds, in part. Let's listen to the snare.
And cymbals, yeah. I think you get the air from the cymbals and you get like the
polish.
Guts, the polish, yeah. Okay, so yeah.
So here's Breezin, and tell me if you think this sounds pristine. I love the tune.
It sounds like Band in a Room. It doesn't sound like it's yet been polished thereof. It's a good recording, and maybe that's why it got... But that one would never jump out at me. When I saw George Benson, I thought that maybe it would have been Gimme the Night. Granted, it's a different year.
Right.
But in my head, George Benson, Fidelity, I go there.
So based on these nominees, what year are we in now? 78?
That was 77.
We're still not yet to the point in time where... I would think, all right, now we're really talking about production pristinity.
And in your mind, what year do you think that happens?
What year did Asia come out? I'm thinking that may have been the game changer.
Well, let's look at 1978. The winner was Asia.
There you go. I thought it was 78.
Roger Nichols, Elliot Shiner, Al Schmidt, and Bill Schnee all got awards for that. God, Bill Schnee's coming up a lot, isn't he?
Yeah.
Dave Grusin nominees. Dave Grusin's Discovered Again, Bill Schnee. James Taylor, JT album. Rumors from Fleetwood Mac. So that might be the one award that it didn't win that year, right?
Right.
Simple Dreams, Linda Ronstadt. Yeah, that's a really good sounding record. Interesting, that was Val Garay, who also did the JT album, James Taylor.
And interesting about when we've talked about Asia so much on this podcast, we did a whole episode on the album. Now when you do it through the prism of this and you look like what came before it and now what's going to come after it, now you see why that album was so game-changing from a production standpoint.
It was. And even, I can't think, I suppose, it even though it's a very different sort of sound, I guess I could possibly put Rumors on its level, but
I never thought of any of their stuff as like super pristine.
Certain songs at a time, you know, you hear them and they sound very sonically nice, but yeah.
So real quick on Asia. So we talked about Bill Schnee is the, first of all, who's the producer? Gary Katz is the producer?
Yes.
So Gary Katz is sort of the mastermind of all of this. And he's,
at least the organizer.
Yes.
I think that might be more his role. I don't know, but I.
And at a higher level, we're thinking Becker and Fagan are sort of producing, right?
Right.
But maybe Gary, this doesn't exist, but Gary Katz would be like the Sonic producer or something, saying, now I know your vision, let me put the team together to put that together.
Yeah, that's what I mean by the organizer.
Yep.
Yeah, getting the team together.
Roger Nichols, who we've talked about, and we talked to his daughter, was the master engineer. So that person is doing what?
I guess he's overseeing all of the...
The tracking,
but we have guys that are credited as doing tracking on that. Bill Schnee and Al Schmidt are credited as tracking. So I've always wondered exactly at this point, what was Nichols' role? It always seems like there's another engineer involved.
Yes. And that's kind of what I was kind of getting to, is that
he was a very technically brilliant guy from the geekdom, from the, you know, so perhaps that was part of his overseeing of the engineering, like you were saying. Let the guys with the good ears do the ear thing, but I will be there and do the technical thing.
And then what was Bill Schnee's role? Was he...
He tracked.
Okay. And who... Then I guess the last question is, who mixed?
Elliot Shiner mixed.
You're talking about a dream team. You're hitting all the high notes there. Al Schmidt, Bill Schnee, Gary Katz.
And let me guess, it was mastered by Bob Ludwig or something. Oh, well, probably. Let me find out. Maybe Bernie Grundman did it.
So Bernie Grundman mastered it, though.
Yeah. Well, certainly he would be a part of a dream team, too.
Yeah.
You know, he's on that level with Bob Ludwig, for sure. All right.
So, well, we've identified 1978 and probably specifically Asia as the turning point in which, like, engineering, what's happening in the studio is becoming an art form in addition to just recording and tracking and mixing.
Exactly right.
Yep. Yep. All right. So 79.
79. Let's finish what happens off after the 70s. Let's see. The winner, Steely Dan, FM, single. Roger Nichols, Al Schmidt, engineers.
Well, that was all part of that same session, right?
It was, actually.
Yeah.
It beat out All in All by Earth, Wind, and Fire, which was George Massenberg. The Close Encounters of the Third Kind soundtrack. Another Alan Parsons Project album, Pyramid. Sounds and Stuff Like That, Quincy Jones with Bruce Swedeen. So you're beating them out. That's pretty good. And the Tribute to Ethel Waters by Diane Carroll. I have no idea. Alan Sides and John Neal, engineers. Interesting, John Neal is also the engineer for Close Encounters.
Wow. How did they not include FM on Asia? Any idea?
No idea.
Because it's such a hit, you know. Maybe, I don't know if there's any background story.
I don't know of any. Whether they were commissioned directly by the movie to do that song, or... Did they cut it from the album and then submit it to the movie? I have no idea. I mean, the movie was called FM, so my guess is they were commissioned to do that. So therefore, usually when something like that is commissioned, the copyrights and all the publishing and all that goes to the movie company.
Yep.
You'll notice that in 80s movies, like the John Hughes movies that were so famous for their music, that all of the versions, with a few minor exceptions, all of the versions that are on those albums, the soundtracks to those movies. So like She's Having a Baby or 16 Candles. Those songs, those versions only occur on those soundtracks. They aren't taken from another album. That was part of his vision. He specifically wanted to own the soundtrack essentially outright.
Interesting. All right, well, that wraps up 1979. Shall we take a quick break and then jump into the 80s?
In fact, it wraps up the 70s in its entirety. Let's take a break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right. So
feels like a whole decade has passed.
Yeah, it really has. So 1980, what's interesting about 80 and 81 for me is I think that's the sweet spot for Yacht Rock.
All right.
So
let's see
what we hear.
I'm going to switch it up and I'm going to give the nominees that lost first.
Okay.
And then go to the winner. So 1980, Styx, Cornerstone. Good sounding record. Really good. Bam. Alan Parsons, Eve. Man.
Hmm.
Just Friends, L.A., Phil Edwards, I don't know what that means, and then Ricky Lee Jones, self-titled. But the winner that year, and I think that there's no doubt that this one wins out, Supertramp's Breakfast in America.
Mm.
Take a look at my girlfriend, she's the only one I got. Not much of a girlfriend, but never seemed to get along.
One of those albums is considered to be one of those system testers back in the day.
Yep.
But I don't know Peter Henderson, engineer, at all. Suppose I could click through his name here on the Wikipedia box and see. Produced records by Supertramp, Rush, Paul McCartney, and others.
Paul McCartney?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so that's 80.
Yep.
We're going to go to 81. Now, why don't you give me all the nominees and see if I can guess the winner?
Okay, fair enough. Here we go. Christopher Cross, debut album.
Winner. I think I already know, didn't he?
Yeah. Give Me the Night, George Benson.
Oof, also winner.
The Wall, James Guthrie, Pink Floyd.
Jeez.
Growing Up in Hollywood. It's a Bill Schnee record, but I don't know it. And New Baby by Don Randy and Quest. Again, Bill Schnee. Which one do you think was the winner in 1981?
I'm guessing it's Christopher Cross.
And you would be incorrect.
Oh!
It was, in fact, The Wall.
Really?
Yeah.
Are we allowed to disagree? I don't know what all the rules are here.
Well, yeah, obviously we can disagree. That's what an opinion podcast is all about. I'm sure that they got some extra points on The Wall because of all the integration of sound effects and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as easy to do then as it is now, and yeah. So maybe they got bonus points for that.
Yeah, it makes sense. It does. I thought Christopher Cross got 5 Grammys, I thought. I'm trying to figure out what
they were. Oh, so you were trying to cheat the system.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll play the same game on 1982.
But real quick, before we move on, did I not say that like 81 is where it really becomes Yacht Rock? So we've got Christopher Cross.
Give Me the Night.
George Benson.
Yep.
And
was it.
Okay.
So far.
2 out of 5.
For that year.
Well, then Quincy Jones shows up, too.
And a couple of Bill Schnees, who, you know, in our opinion, he's
right
there in the center of Yacht Rock. Okay. 1982. Here are the nominees. Speaking of Quincy Jones, The Dude.
Ooh.
Journey. Escape.
Interesting.
The Police. Zenyatta Mandata. Steely Dan's Gaucho. And another Alan Parsons project, Turn of a Friendly Card.
Oh, I'm guessing Gaucho.
You would be correct.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah, you got that one right. That one I think I could have gotten from memory if I wasn't looking at it, because I do remember.
That's sort of what I did.
Because I remember that Bill Schnee said he got the Grammy, and the Larry Carlton story about getting a Grammy for a record they didn't work on.
That's true. Yep.
But, okay. So yeah, Bruce Swedeen there with The Dude. It's a really good sounding record, very yachty record at times, mm-hmm. I would say. And certainly Gaucho, so two of the group again. So
even the songs that aren't yacht rocky have a yacht rock sort of sensibility to it, a smoothness that you like in your yacht rock.
On The Dude, you
on
mean?
The Dude, yeah.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Just right. Once, for example.
1983.
Okay. The boat has not yet sank, the yacht.
No, it has not. And it won't sink this year. I can tell by looking at this. Because we got The Nightfly as one of the choices. Dire Straits, Love Over Gold. What do you know? Another Alan Parsons project. Eye in the Sky.
Jeez. Always a bridesmaid, though.
Yeah. Toto 4.
Oof.
And American Fool, John Cougar. Which you wouldn't think John Cougar and great sounding engineer, but that album sounds amazing.
That's because it's got Fool in the title. So maybe that's makes it yachty. Yeah. For some reason, I thought I remember Toto 4, but I am not. I'm going to say that sort of a sweep, and I'm going to go back to Fagan, Nightfly.
It was Toto 4.
So my memory served, but my talents did not. That's pretty, usually it's backwards.
But there you go. So we still got Yacht well represented, but certainly the winner and Nightfly, right?
Yep.
Okay. Let's go to 1984.
The year the yacht sank.
Well.
I bet we're going to start to see some synthetic sounds come out here.
Okay. You're certainly right with one of the nominees, and that's that Bossa Nova Hotel from Michael Cimbello.
Ooh, yeah.
Al Jarreau self-titled, so that would be the Mornin' Boogie Down album.
Jay right? Graydon?
Yep. Styx, Kilroy Was Here.
Ooh.
Tom Scott's Target album.
Wow, good for him.
And Michael Jackson's Thriller.
I mean, is it too obvious? I'm going with Thriller.
Yeah, it's too obvious. It is Thriller.
Yeah.
Here you are, right on.
Now, Certified Yacht on that, so we're still,
Yeah, and then the Jarreau album had Certified Yacht.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bossa Nova Hotel may have one, too. I don't know. Anyway, 85. Let's see what we got. Here are the nominees.
Yes.
Yes?
Is it a Yes album?
No.
No? Okay.
Thompson Twins, Into the Gap.
Wow. Ooh.
Heartbeat City by The Cars.
Mm-hmm.
Can't Slow Down, Lionel Richie. Aerial Boundaries by Michael Hedges, so that's a sort of a new agey of acoustic guitar album, mm-hmm. and then Chicago 17, Humberto Gatica. I finally learned how to say his name.
Yes, geez, I'm going with Chicago 17,
and you would be absolutely correct.
Yes. You're the meaning in my life. You're the inspiration. You bring feeling to my life. You're the That's the first David Foster producer, or did he produce 16?
He produced 16.
Yeah, okay.
But 17 is clearly a sonic marvel. Yeah, there's 16. Just no question about that.
16 is the one with Stay the Night and those hits, or no?
Is no, that's 17? 17.
That is 17, okay.
16 had a couple hits. The hits off of 16 were Hard for Me to Say I'm Sorry, and I'm not going to say the Bill Champlin way.
He says something
Love Me different. Tomorrow. Love Me, was it Love Me Tomorrow? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Well, here's your track listing. Yeah,
Let me know. So it's the
this
last
says
song.
Hard. Sorry to say, I'm hard. No.
It does say that.
No, no. Okay. Wait, is Bill Champlin a Wikipedia editor?
He's editing.
Love Wikipedia. Me Tomorrow. Yep.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It's funny because all the hits are co-written by Foster and Cetera, and then mm-hmm. the rest are written by others. Although, did you know that Waiting for You to Decide? So Steve Lukather has writing credits on Waiting for You to Decide with David Paich. That's talk about a Toto joint. And you got David Foster producing.
I don't remember what that one sounded like. Let's hit some of that. You've been running away. Now you run out of places to hide. I can certainly hear that as a Toto tune.
Yep. And it's got Bill Champlin co-singing the lead vocals. But this opening track, What You're Missing, is written by Joseph Williams, speaking of Toto.
That's one of the better tunes on the record.
And Jay Gruska.
And Jay Gruska. Oh,
yes. Man. Speaking of, isn't he in Maxim?
Maxis.
Maxis, yeah. Both of them.
Yep.
He's prolific. Well, they're kind of like the Bizarro Toto. Remember, that's what I call the Maxis. All right. Sorry for that, listener Yorn. We digress.
He's just happy that we mentioned Maxis.
And listener Yorn.
Yeah. Alrighty. Let's move on to 1986.
I keep waiting for it to be entirely synthetic and digital. Are we there yet?
No, actually. Got Crazy from the Heat, David Lee Roth.
Wow.
Dream of the Blue Turtle, Sting.
Mm-hmm. I remember that album sounding good.
Yeah. I don't know this one. Dave Grusin and Lee Ritenour's Harlequin. I probably should. And then Modern Matters by Special EFX. I do remember them. And then Brothers in Arms by Dire Straits. Do you have a selection from that?
I'm guessing Dire Straits.
Bros. You'd be correct, yeah. That's one of those albums that was pointed to. I was never that crazy about Dire Straits. Maybe because his vocal is so limited.
Yeah.
And basically can do the sort of talking vocal thing, and that's...
Is that the one where you get your money for nothing and your chicks for free?
Yeah, is it? Yeah, I think so.
Just listen to side A. So Far Away, Money for Nothing, Walk of Life, and then Your Latest Trick, which I don't know, but you can't not talk about this album and not play the intro to Money for Nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a good sounding record.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Was never a huge fan of Dire Straits, but all right, cool. Year are we in?
Want to continue? Well, that would put us in 87. I suppose we can finish out the 80s,
yeah,
right?
We'll finish 87, right. 88, 89.
Okay. Let's see here. We have Dog Eat Dog by Joni Mitchell. Mike Shipley was the engineer, who was like the right-hand man for Mutt Lang, so I don't know the sound of that record. Riptide by Robert Palmer.
Okay.
A GRP live album, David Foster's self-titled album. So that had, again, Humberto Gatica as engineer, and Steve Winwood back in the High Life.
That sounded unique when it came out, that last one. GRP is that David Grusin project, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds great, but I bet the Academy had no idea what they were listening to or talking about. So I am going to go with, what was that last one? I'm going to go with
Back
that.
In the High Life?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah. Tom Lord Elsh. First,
ooh, he comes first on the scene.
Him, yeah. Think about it. There must be higher love. Found another model hidden in the stars above. Without it, life is wasted time. Look inside your heart.
Then owns the 90s. Him and his brother Chris just owned the 90s.
Boy, did they ever. All right.
Last but not least, 89?
Nope, this is 88.
Oh, 88. Sorry. Good year.
Yeah, let's see. Cinemagic, Dave Grusin. Boy.
Nice. He's getting the props at least.
Heart and Soul by Ronnie Millsap. Pink Floyd's A Momentary Lapse of Reason. Michael Jackson, Bad. Neon by Flim and the BBs. And, oh, they got an extra one here. Reflections, Bill Watrous, Al Schmidt, engineer. Sheesh. Jeez. Some of this stuff I have never heard of.
I bet it's Michael Jackson, but I'm going to go with what should have won it, which was that Pink Floyd album.
Yeah, that's a great sounding record, but they did go with Michael Jackson's Bad. Yeah. I don't know. I could never get into that record. It felt harsh and just trying too hard.
Yeah, I agree.
And maybe they just raised the bar so high with Thriller that there was never going to be anything to satisfy you after that.
You're right. Yeah, I agree. There was nothing that interesting to me in that whole thing.
All right. Let's finish off the 80s. We've got Facets by Doc Severinsen. Interesting, Mick Gazowski was the engineer. So it took everything he learned from the Mangione sessions and applied it to Doc. Little Feats, Let It Roll, George Massenberg. Listener Derek will love this one. Provision by Scritti Politti.
Ooh.
He thinks that's the better of the two records.
Yeah.
Stevie Winwood, Roll With It, the follow-up. Glenn Frey's Soul Searching, which had Elliot Shiner as engineer. And Through the Lens by Checkfield. John Archer, engineer.
That's a tough one.
You're going with Checkfield?
No. Oh. It would be a guess, but I'm going to just give it to Elliot Shiner because he's worthy.
On the Glenn Frey record.
Glenn Frey.
No, it was actually Steve Winwood again. Roll with it. Tom Lord Alge.
There you go.
Again. So no wonder he got so many calls in the 90s.
Exactly.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, that was interesting. So, surprise, surprise, much to my surprise.
Yeah.
It's good, though, that we're celebrating the production side of music, so I'm sure.
We kind of said that this season was going to turn into that. I don't know that it is long-term,
no.
But it certainly steered the boat in that direction this week.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Cool. Well, can I surprise you with a sound effect?
Yeah.
Listen to this soft, glowing, flowing sound. Falling to sleep.
Billowy is nice.
Okay. Did I wake you up? Did I scare you? Did I surprise you?
Well, I knew lightning round was coming. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah. Okay. Well, much to my surprise, I have a lightning round that's all about surprises. So
color me surprised.
Yes. I guess I should start since you've been springing all the surprises on me.
Yeah. I've been dominant here. So go ahead.
Okay. So
are we doing snake draft style, by the way? Okay.
How many times are you going to either ask that or say that? The
answer
is always
depends on when we go off the air.
All right. Found at sea.
Okay.
I found an interesting Poco track that surprised me just how yachty it was. Like, I know Poco's not supposed to be yachty.
What year are we talking?
1983.
Okay.
Inamorata is the album.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Save a Corner of Your Heart?
Well, that certainly was influenced by the sound of the yacht.
For sure. Yep. Closer to the yacht than, say, what's their?
Heart of the Night or Crazy Love?
Crazy Love. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Heart of the Night's pretty close to that sexy sax. Anyways.
True.
That's what I found at sea. What have you found at sea?
Well, I was listening to the vinyl copy of Mark Jordan's Blue Desert. Remember, as I told you, I'm trying to spend more time listening to the record and just listening to the record, not multitasking, but also reading the sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the reason we talk about why we like the vinyl process in the first place, and then we never go back to it as old people. But I'm making a concerted effort. So as I was looking at it, in typical Mark Jordan sort of fashion, with his sort of snarky wit, the liner notes on the back. Of course, it says produced by Jay Graydon. Arranged and conducted by Jay Graydon, Mark Jordan, and Michael Shorty Peterstein Omardian.
What?
Hold
That's
on,
what it says?
They called Michael Omardian, his in quotes in the middle, Michael Shorty Peterstein. Omardian.
Okay.
The second engineer and geek to the stars, Mark Jordan.
Oh, my God.
But
Mark had to have written this himself.
I know. Yeah. And of course, it's recorded and mixed at Garden Rake Studios, which we know is Jay Graydon's nickname. But at the end, special thanks from Gaylord Buttock and the Contessa to the following people. And then they go to list everybody. What? So bizarre.
I don't even get that.
I don't either.
All right. Well, you've got me lost at sea now. What's going on?
All right. So we also embrace the landlocked Nyacht Rockers on this show. And we, in past seasons, haven't had enough opportunity to talk about Fleetwood Mac because that was taboo. We mentioned their Rumours album earlier as one of the nominees that lost. But I'm going to go to something that occurred a few years later, the Tango in the Night album, 1987. And this just caught my attention when I was listening to it the other day, that because Fleetwood Mac had multiple lead vocalists and their three lead vocalists all have very unique sounds, here's a great example. We're going to listen to the chorus of the song Tell Me Lies and how, as producer, Lindsey Buckingham used the three different voices. Christine McVie is singing the lead, and then you get these two different answering vocals, one that comes from the left side, sort of reverbed out, and that's Stevie Nicks. And then it answers again from the right side, reverbed out, Lindsey Buckingham. And because they're three different voices, it works really well. If it had been the same voice layered multiple places, it gets to sound like a Beyonce record where you don't know who's singing what anymore. Who's the lead voice,
right?
Because it's all the same voice. This, the use of the three different voices is what makes this work. So we're going to check out the chorus, and the title is actually Little Lies.
Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies.
Nice.
Yeah, so it creates a really interesting stereo field, too, when you're listening to it.
Yeah, and that's why you should listen to this podcast on headphones or earbuds. Hear them sonic gems.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, that was your buried treasure.
It was indeed. So all right, what do you got?
My buried treasure, again, under the auspices of surprise, surprise, is... Remember, so the Terrence Boylan album that I'm used to listening to and loving was from 1977, just called Terrence Boylan,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when we had on Dane Donahue,
mm-hmm,
and Terrence Boylan was producing, but he kept getting distracted by going off to doing his other project?
Right.
Because that Terrence Boylan album from 1977 sounds so close to,
mm-hmm,
I always thought it was that one. But I don't think it is, because he's got an album that came out, this is my surprise, surprise, in 1980, right? So after the, and there's, it's called Susie.
Yeah.
Right? And then my surprise, surprise came to me when I heard the song Tell Me, and I just love this track. Here it is.
Tell me what's going on. I don't know anymore what's right and wrong.
Are you familiar with that track, or does it come as a surprise to you?
I think I've heard it. I got to be honest, I haven't spent much time with that album, and I don't know why. There's something about the Boylan sound, because I hear it in that song, and I certainly heard it in the first album, the earlier one. There is, tell me if you get this, an eeriness, mm-hmm, or a mystical, mysterious.
That's what I said about the other album. I said around it's a vibe. Yeah, I was trying to talk cool like the kids, like I do.
Yeah.
But there's a certain melancholy to it.
That's the right word. Yeah. And it's not just because there's a lot of reverb on his voice, though. That's part of it. But it, the whole thing, just the instrument choices and the everything just. I can't tell you. Here's what how they did it. They did this, this, and this. I couldn't tell you what the elements are.
My only recommendation along those lines would be to listen to the albums in their entirety, and then you'll get it. All right.
Well stated. Okay.
Well, I am going to reserve my right to go last since you sprung this whole episode as a surprise to me. So what is your final thought?
Wow, I haven't gone last yet this season. Oh, my gosh. You're finding new ways. Okay. A few weeks ago, you made a comment and it kind of dawned on me after I left the recording. You made a comment. We were talking about Howard Jones, No One Is to Blame, and how much you didn't like what Phil Collins brought to the popular version.
At least at the time.
At the time. Because there was an original version on the Dream Into Action album. And then as that comment settled into my psyche, I thought, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Tom prefers the drum machine version?
Yeah.
No one ever is to blame. You can build a mansion, but you just can't live it.
I mean, it's not actually a drum machine. They were programming. That was like the Fairlight system, which was one of the first big sampling workstations. In fact, those drum sounds are the same ones that Tears for Fears use on Shout. So if you compare that. But there was a forum that I kind of go to every once in a while. Steve Hoffman is a mastering engineer, and he also monitors this forum and has deeper discussion about music. And I found an actual thread on that, and they had people vote which one they liked better, the original from the Dream Into Action album or the single version. And 81%
like the single
version. The single. 19 did not.
So I just, in my own defense, it's not that I don't like drum machine, it's that I don't like drum machine and fake bass in yacht rock.
Oh
yes, I mean, you think
that changes everything.
When I grew up in the '80s, I was listening to Aha, Alphaville, Depeche Mode, New Order.
Yeah, you probably thought those were real drums and real bass.
I lived with you, and I knew the difference.
Yes.
All right. So yeah. So that's clarification is important.
Okay.
My final thought. Since you kind of quizzed me there, I'm going to quiz you. Ooh. You've watched The Simpsons, correct?
Well. I probably haven't watched it in 20 years, which means I missed half of them.
I want to play you a clip from C. Montgomery Burns, and then I want you to reflect on whether he is yacht or nyacht.
Okay.
Ahoy, ahoy. Ahoy, ahoy. Ahoy. Ahoy, ahoy.
Yellow.
Ahoy, ahoy, Executive VP.
So, your thoughts? Yacht or not?
He's half right.
Right. The other half would be?
Polloi.